Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the spirit of reconciliation, the Swapcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respect to the elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
We're talking again
about body swapping.
Welcome to the Swapcast podcast, the world's only podcast dedicated to body swap movies. I'm your host, Paul Mitzi, and with me we have
Lucy Thomas
and
Brendan Levi.
In today's episode, we'll be breaking down the 2022 sci-fi epic sequel, Avatar: The Way of Water, starring Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, Sigourney Weaver, and Kate Winslet, where Jake Sully must protect his family when humans return to wreak havoc on Pandora. And to help us do that, we have a very special guest joining us today from the fantastic podcast Hunting Season, Broderick Gordis. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul. Hi, Brendan. Hi, Lucy.
Welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for having me back.
Welcome back. Yes.
I'm excited.
But before we get into that, just a reminder that we absolutely love hearing from our listeners and we welcome film suggestions for future episodes. So please reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram. Send us an email at theswapcastpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to support our show, reviewing us is the best way possible. So to say thank you, if we reach 100 star ratings on iTunes and Spotify, we will finally fulfill our fans' most common request to review Face off. So, on to Avatar: The Way of Water. I think it's fair to say that we all came out pretty positive on our review of the first installment.
Pretty positive. Me saying it's fine is pretty positive for me.
Yes. Contrarian Brendan.
I mean, compared to what you normally say about the movies you review on the podcast, it was very positive.
Yes.
True.
While there were some story gripes, we're all pretty much agreed on Avatar being a fun, visually impressive ride. So with 13 years, hundreds of millions of dollars, and several technological advancements under its belt, did Avatar: The Way of Water manage to improve on what came before? I'm going to let our guest, Brod, start this today.
did it improve on what came before?
Yeah.
I think objectively the answer is yes. I'm going to start by saying I'm not a big fan of the first Avatar. I remember seeing that one at the cinemas more than once even. I think I saw it a couple of times. And it was extremely cool and new and impressive, particularly like visually, like nothing we'd ever seen before. The CGI and the motion capture was incredible. And then in particular, the 3D of it. Like that was just, that technology was brand new and it was super impressive and exciting. And I had to see it more than once. In the 13 years since, I've barely thought about Avatar, except to talk about the fact that Avatar had no cultural footprint for being the highest grossing film of all time, which has been a fun like debate that podcasts like the Slash Filmcast have talked about and stuff like that. I hadn't really returned to watching it. I think maybe I'd watched parts of it when a friend of mine got a 3D TV, when that was a thing. And before going to see Avatar: The Way of Water with you, Paul, Damask, my co-host on the Swapcast, on the Hunting Seasons podcast, rewatched the first Avatar on Disney Plus, and I was far from impressed. It visually is still good, I suppose, but like in 13 years, a lot of movies are much more visually impressive now, I think. And I think the story is shit. It's really boring. Uh-oh. And I don't like any of the characters. And I had a bad time watching it. I was bored.
And they took out the banging scene
that we all remember seeing when we saw it at the cinemas, right?
Yeah.
Everyone remembers the ponytail sex. Anyway, going to see The Way of Water, I went in not looking forward to it. But I think it's fair to say the sequel, Listen, 13 years in the making. Did it need to be 13 years? Probably not. I was anticipating that much. But the visually, it is a step above again. It is like pushing the limits of CGI for hyperrealism. It is astounding to look at. The technology is just that good now. It is very imaginative. It's showing you things you've never seen before. The 3D is extremely impressive. Seeing this in IMAX 3D is the way to see this.
This is a bit hard when you're in Adelaide.
Totally.
I flew over there. Yeah. Everyone should do that.
Not everyone.
Fly to another state and see Avatar.
I don't see why that is a logistical nightmare.
If you can't see it, I imagine seeing like a VMAX. Do you guys have VMAX there? Like Village?
Yeah, we do.
In 3D? Yeah, right. Adelaide's got that far, right? Yeah.
We used to have IMAX, but it's gone now.
Yeah.
Is that what you call the drive-in?
I think to see it on the biggest screen possible in 3D is the way to watch it. From a storytelling perspective, I think it is a step up on the first one, but not lots. You described this as a ride. I think that is a very, very good way to describe this movie. It is an experience. When you are on it, while you're in it, it is very, very fun to be there, even if it goes way too long. Mm-hmm. I think less is more is something that James Cameron could learn about. Mm-hmm. I was bored at times in this film, even in moments where I was obviously impressed with what was going on. There's like a sequence in the middle of this film that takes place mostly underwater where characters are learning, you know, how to breathe underwater and see all these magical creatures and stuff. It's great. It goes on for fucking ever. I was ready to move on to something else. It was time for something to happen in the story. I got bored there. I think I'd be more inclined to go and rewatch this film if I didn't feel like I'd seen too much of it when I saw it in the cinemas. I have thought about this film very little since seeing it at the movies. Like, it so just is nothing.
Just like 2009 Avatar.
Exactly. Exactly. Is it a better film than the first one? Yes. Is that saying much? Not really. But I do think it's an experience that's worth seeing at least once, particularly on a big screen in 3D. And that's it's a ride that you should go. You should try once, but I wouldn't line up for it a second time.
Wholeheartedly agree. Except I didn't see it in 3D. But it's still really good to see on the big screen.
Even I did.
All right, so Brendan, as the one person who didn't see this in 3D, what did you think of the film?
Like, I was definitely impressed by how just very fluid the interactions between actual humans and, like, the scenery, the other avatars and stuff. Like, I still feel like there was issues there that I had felt before, which would be just the movement of the characters. There is still this, like, they don't know what they're doing with their fingers or their arms because they're computer characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I did still get to have the immersion of this world, I think, even though I wasn't watching it in an amazing cinema like you boys.
Brendan, do you know about the frame rate changes in this film?
Like that it's like 60 frames or?
No, that it's like 24 frames in some shots and 48 frames in other shots. And it switches back and forth. Multiple, like I'm talking at least 100, probably 200 to 300 times during the film, back and forth.
If you watch it in 3D.
If you watch it in 3D, depending which cinema you go to, I'm sure there are places where it just runs at 24 frames standard, mm-hmm. but in James Cameron's preferred version, the frame rate changes from scene to scene. So sometimes it's high frame rate, sometimes it's standard frame rate. Did
okay,
you know about
so
that?
Just like as a civilian, what civilian. Does that mean?
So generally, most films and TV you see, especially like scripted stuff, is at 24 frames. That's the standard. Most movies, the cinematic look, everything mm-hmm. runs at 24 images per second mm-hmm. running in front of you. When it's a higher frame rate, like 48 seconds, it looks smoother because you're seeing more images per second. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've ever seen like when they put on True Motion or those sorts of things on a TV. Often if you go look at a TV at like JB Hi-Fi or something like that, everything looks a bit smoother.
Yeah.
That's high frame rate. That's artificial, that version normally.
That's
in the movie,
adding additional frames.
They extrapolate fake frames in between basically to make it look smoother. But in James Cameron's Avatar The Way of Water, when you go see it at the cinemas, some scenes are deliberately rendered at 48 frames per second and some are rendered deliberately at 24 frames per second. So it goes
why
from being...
Why would it switch like that? I feel like that's...
That's a fucking great question. I actually forgot about that until you started talking about like the preferred way to see it, Paul. I remembered this goddamn frame rate switching that was so distracting. It is so weird. And I doubly wish you'd seen it, Brendan, because I know you would have hated it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is with the high frame rate is that it can make dialogue scenes look strange, but it actually helps action scenes because you know how sometimes you watch action scenes when like the camera is moving and there's lots of movement, there can be a lot of like blur, whereas doing the extra frames actually makes everything a lot clearer in action scenes.
Yeah, like it was sort of experienced with The Hobbit because they did that in 60.
Exactly.
Which is like a lot closer to the human eye. No, I think that
was 48
eye.
As well. It was 48 too.
Was it?
48, yeah. It was 48.
Yeah.
Well, but everyone just felt weird because we're just so accustomed to the 24 frames.
But that's what I find interesting about this is like I think it's weird for about 5 minutes and then you forget about it. You get used to it. Mm-hmm. And
I feel like when I was watching The Hobbit, like I just
I don't think The Hobbit used that technology great though. Mm. Whereas I think if I really think he should have just gone, it's 48 frames the entire time. You'll get used to it in 5 minutes. It'll be fine. But he goes back and forth and it drove me bananas. I hated it.
I noticed, but I wasn't like upset by it.
I was like, I'm at the cinema by myself.
So Lucy, like this is probably the first time you've been to the cinemas in a long when time. And probably the first time you've been to the cinemas by yourself in, I'm guessing, several years.
Yeah, maybe so, even like 10 years, maybe. Mm.
Was Avatar worth it for you? Was this a good choice for your first cinema outing in a long time?
Was it great to just return to Pandora just with yourself, you know?
I don't know. I wish this wasn't like the first me dipping my toe back in. I don't know. To see a movie that goes for 3 hours and 15 minutes by yourself and you've got no one to turn to or like bounce off, it was very weird.
But did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Did you think it was better than the first or?
I don't know. I felt like the first one was kind of tighter. This was,
Which is crazy because it's just the same length, isn't it?
No, this one goes for...
It's like 25 minutes long or something, yeah.
Yeah. The original was 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, like the sequel always has to be like bigger and whatever, so it's like maybe...
And the same plot.
More high concept. I don't know.
It's like we didn't just get Jake Sully learning the ways of the Na'vi. We got his whole family learning the new way of the water Na'vi.
But I enjoyed that stuff more than there were just too many action sequences for me, like that just went on and on. I felt like the first one had kind of like one or two like these really big long extended things, and this it felt endless. I kind of enjoyed the stuff of like the world and learning the ways and being underwater and actually my favorite thing about it was being underwater, the water, just that world. I really loved the way it looked. And it's so hot in Adelaide at the moment. And it just, I was like, I wanted to dive into the screen. It just looked delicious. And do you guys remember me talking about the first time I went to the IMAX and somebody did scream when a fish jumped out?
Yeah.
No, you know, we made a joke about the train.
Did you do that? Did you do it this time?
No, but somebody else did because the first thing is her, like, pulling her bow and arrow back, right? And it, like, the arrow really, like, points directly at you and somebody, like, I'm not sure if they just got dropped on planet
How
Earth
old
or
were they?
Maybe they were from the olden days or something, but somebody was shocked.
Was it a little child who thought there was an arrow being
pointed
at them?
It was an adult. Maybe
that's sad.
50-something years old. Yeah.
Wow.
Need to get show them that footage of the train coming towards the screen and see how they react to that. Like,
So, as I said before, I actually traveled to another state to watch this film. I wanted to see it on the biggest screen I possibly can, and I definitely was happy with my choice there. I think this film...
Yeah, I bet it would have been great.
This film just looks amazing. And I went to the movies last night to see the new Tom Hanks movie, and they showed the trailer for the new Ant-Man beforehand. And yeah, that's another, that's a similar kind of film in terms of that it's set in this fantastical world. And there's this shot where they're standing around. And I just was thinking, like, how crappy it looked in terms of visually compared to what was achieved in Avatar. Like, you watch that trailer for Ant-Man and it literally looks like a couple of plastic sets that people are standing in with a CGI background imposed behind it. Whereas
you hear that,
Avatar,
all you shitheads working at Technicolor or whatever company did it.
But like,
you didn't beat Avatar.
But it's not because of people's skill levels. It's because of the amount of money and resources and time and thought that was put into this film. And you can feel it in every frame. Like, this does feel like a film that took 13 years to make.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like a film that cost $300 million to make.
And I mean, I kind of think, like, even though that's impressive, it also is slightly absurd.
But is it because it, you know,
people are dying, Kim.
It's a business. Like, filmmaking in the end of the day is a business.
Yeah,
300 million.
I love that James Cameron, like, won the Academy Award for the most expensive film made at the time, and his mm-hmm. ex-wife has won, like, the best director for, like, the cheapest movie, whatever it was. I just love that juxtaposition.
Yeah. But I think people, like, forget, you know, $300 million, you spend that on a movie. It's not just going into the ether. That $300 million, as Brendan should know as someone in the industry, $300 million is going into the pockets of the millions of people working on this film.
Yeah, the Sam Worthingtons and the Kate Winslets. And
yeah, okay. But, you know, this
Brendan
film probably
didn't make a dime off this movie.
Yeah. Of course, there's some people getting paid more than others, but there would have been hundreds, if not thousands, of on-the-ground workers that worked tirelessly to bring this to life, that this paid their
wages for 13 years.
I get
that. I mean, it is amazing, but it also is.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
Yeah.
Wait, so it's been in, like, they've been working on it for 13 years?
Basically.
Yeah, in terms of if you go from starting the script to it being finished.
How long did the script take? They must have spent 12.5 years on the fucking
He actually got
effects.
Other people to write it this time, which you could tell the dialogue was not quite as bad as the first one because it wasn't just him writing it.
So they structured this like they do a TV show writer's room where they got a bunch of them together and they plotted out the next five movies and then started writing all together as a collective rather than just the normal script writing process.
Guys,
so
I don't think it needs to be five. I don't think it, that. Just
we're going to get, theoretically, we're going to get a new Avatar film every 2 years from here on out. Like, there was that 13-year gap, yes, but I think he's filmed all of three now. They're already filming four, I think. Yeah. We should be getting one every 2 years from here on out, pretty much. So get used
and
to
I
it.
Mean, at this point, it's a bona fide hit. It's on its way to the 2 billion mark, which he said it needed to have to be able to justify itself. So it's Avatar world, baby.
Whoa.
What Brod said about, like, the cultural impact is pretty interesting because I do agree. Like, there's nothing that I point to where it goes, oh, it was so influenced by
Avatar. Yeah, it's so inaccessible. Like, you know, you have to travel to a different state and put on a pair of glasses and whatever to watch it. Like, it
correctly.
You don't, you're never going to put it on when you're, like, having a sick day or whatever.
So I've had to eat my words about this a little bit. I can't remember who tweeted this or where it came from, but I've been arguing for a long time that Avatar had no cultural impact, right? Like, people went and saw it. It was a huge thing at the time, and then everyone forgot about it. There was no one doing... I mean, mate, there was a period of time where people were dressing up blue for, like, maybe a year after Avatar came out, but, like, it wasn't showing up at conventions. People weren't buying the toys. No one remembers the characters' names. No one remembers any famous lines. It's not like Star Wars where it, like, grabbed people's imagination
like
and then it was
have
everywhere.
Just based
All
on
I absolutely will say right. is that however many years after it came out, there was that amazing Saturday Night Live sketch
about
Papyrus.
The best. That's the best thing adjacent to Avatar that ever existed.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes. Yeah. And, like, it just for no reason came out. You know, someone just thought of it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why that happened when it did. It was really strange, but amazing.
And James Cameron in the press tour for this one actually addressed it, and he said that he didn't know it was papyrus.
They've changed the logo now. They're actually they've done some graphic design. But anyway, that I thought was true, and it was one of the reasons I was like, I wonder how this film is going to do. Like, is it going to? My thought was people will go and see it once, and it'll do well for a couple of weekends, and then people won't go a second time because attention spans are different 13 years later. There's more stuff to be consuming on Netflix. The next, you know, Marvel movie comes out in a few weeks, basically. Like, people are going to move on quicker than they did the first Avatar. Movies? Yeah, I mean, even that, like, people just aren't going to the cinemas as much at the moment. It's been, obviously, through the COVID lockdowns and stuff like that, it was terrible, and it's still struggling at the moment.
And there's TikTok now, so why would you?
100%. Like, does Gen Z give a shit about movies. Avatar? Do you know what I mean?
Nah.
Or movies in general?
Unless there's a song they can do a fucking dance to while spray painted blue.
Sure. Okay, Boomer. Anyway, the point is, though, it's going to make $2 billion. So I'm fucking wrong. And what someone pointed out is that, yes, Star Wars has a huge cultural footprint, right? In terms of you can see stuff, people meme it and all that sort of stuff, right? However, people did the same thing for Morbius. Morbius got memed. It had a cultural footprint when it came out. No one went and saw that film. It fucking flopped. No one's memeing Avatar.
It's the Jared Leto, like,
vampire
superhero film. Yeah.
Okay. It's Morbin time became a thing, right?
Yeah.
And it made no money, but it had a cultural footprint. Avatar might not remember the names. It maybe doesn't have a Morbin time, like, meme going for it. But it's making a fuck ton of money. People are going to see it. And I think the thing that I learned is that I shouldn't assume just because I'm on the internet, I'm on Twitter, and I see people memeing something, that it means that the general populace gives a shit about it. It means that a group of super nerds are obsessed with it, and that includes me, and that I am this portion of the audience, and that I have projected my interpretation of what cultural footprint and cultural impact is, and I was fucking wrong.
Yeah, that's because like every election I'm like, the Greens are gonna win. It's all exactly. I see in my feed. Exactly. And then it's just like, it's just because that's what your surroundings are, I guess.
And I just think it's in general, it's like people go and see a Star Wars film and some portion of them are obsessed with it. Some people go and see it once the same way they see Avatar, and so it makes $1 billion. But they don't give a shit about, they don't remember the character's name was Rey or Kylo Ren or whatever. They saw it that one time, they saw the new Star Wars, or go and see the next one, it comes out in 3 years. And people do the same thing for Avatar. They don't know who Jake Sully is. I don't know a single one of the kids' names in this film. Not one of them. There's four of them.
Spider.
Spider doesn't count. I couldn't tell you a
single
one. We need
to talk about Spider.
But the film's going to make $2 billion. It's going to get Infinity sequels. Like, what the fuck do I know?
Can we talk about the movie or swaps?
This is what I wrote down five things after the movie finished. I quickly scribbled some things down. Speaking about cultural footprints, I wrote down cultural stuff, discuss.
Do you mean Spider's dreads? Like white guy dreads? Is that the cultural stuff?
Yeah, and just sort of like the general
Maori, like,
it seems like to borrow a lot from Polynesian culture.
Yeah.
And maybe also like Native American.
The first film certainly
first
does.
First one, definitely,
And I thought Paul was saying that, you know, that there was like this real effort this time and there was a team behind it, and I kind of thought it was worse.
Well, they hired one Maori guy to play one, and they hired Kate Winslet to play his wife. It's real strange.
I don't know. I'm not part of that culture. I don't know. I know I've seen, and I talked about this in our last review, like James Cameron has said that, you know, the cultural leaders of these communities have reached out to him and say how much they appreciate what he's doing and what the causes that he's trying to highlight with these films, and they actually want to be a part of it. So I don't know, maybe they appreciated the allusions to their culture in this. I don't know. I literally, it's funny, I have not seen many think pieces about it, which is strange. Maybe because
I read a Washington Post article about it, and they were saying other people in these communities were angry. So I feel like because they're not one monotone voice, there's going to be some people who are happy,
who agree and disagree. Yeah. Angry.
Yeah,
but I mean, like, that Spider Kid was culturally appropriating, right? Like, That was off.
I don't know. He just, like, lived among them and, like, how was he appropriating? He was,
I mean, on a baseline level, though.
He painted his body, Brendan.
On a baseline level, though, like, just the whole story of Jake Sully, the white guy who comes in and is, like, the best Na'vi there ever was.
White savior.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That is fucking problematic as shit. That's, like, that's the hot take.
That's not the hot take. That was discussed in the first.
Oh, it's Stone Cold now. Yeah. But like, that's the like, that's the.
But you know what? The first note I made when I started this film was like, wait a second, I totally forgot to like say this in the first one, and just watching it again, I'm just like, how? Like, what's her name? What's his partner's name?
Natiri.
Sorry, Natira.
Neytiri.
Yeah. How the fuck do you stay with Jake Sully after finding out that, I've just infiltrated your culture and led, like, an army of, like, killers to your door to, like, wipe you out?
Yeah, the bar is so low for men, really. It's like...
Now I've, like, you know, dominated this giant creature. We cool now? Like, that was the first one, and I was just like, how are these people still in a relationship? How does this work? Like, every time you look at, like, these people coming to kill you, every time one of your kids die, which happens in this film, like, you're just reminded, this is all your fault, Jake.
Yeah, because two things. Is the whole premise of this, forgive me, but, like, they just come back to fuck with him? Like, why?
Yeah,
why
it's absurd. It's absurd that
it's like they're going to travel 5 years on one of those crazy ships and like all those stuff and this vendetta.
For the kids at home who haven't watched Avatar 2: The Way of Water, Paul, do you want to give a 30-second summary?
I'm going to give him 40 seconds because this movie goes for, 40. He gets an extra 10 because this movie goes for such a long time. It's a special. It's your lucky day,
I reckon, Paul. I reckon you can do it, Paul.
Yeah, but you do have to explain The Way of the Water.
And it also has been exactly 1 month since I've watched this movie as well.
Good times. So,
yeah.
All right. You ready? Set, go.
So Jake has a bunch of kids now, including an adopted human son, and then the humans decide to come back and take Pandora again because they want to relocate everyone from Earth, and they decide they want to kill Jake Sully because he's helping defend Pandora from the humans. So to do that, all the the guy that died in the first one, they've made him into an like a Na'vi avatar, and a whole bunch of other military people into Na'vi avatars, and they come down and start hunting him down. So they run away to a water tribe, and then they end up.
Also, what, didn't he have an adopted daughter?
They adopted a daughter too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You said son.
There's two mystery pregnancies.
No, Spider is the son. Spider, daughter, sort of. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Spider,
okay.
Son.
He's more, Spider's more of a pet. They're like adopted a stray.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kiri is
like son of a big military evil jerk. And, what was the other girl's name? Who's the reincarnation of Sully, of
Sigourney.
Kiri or something?
Kiri.
This is going to be murder.
let's look at this from a body, like, this is a body swap podcast. We forget this sometimes.
Especially when I'm on. Yeah. That's my podcast, I'm sorry.
Okay, so let's look at the body swaps in this. So I don't know if we can count Sigourney Weaver as a body swap. Because
reincarnation is not a body swap. I feel like we should film.
I don't think she is a reincarnation.
Maybe, like, we don't know exactly what that character is. If you want to consider, like, the spirit of the planet sort of turning into a person, that
guys,
I guess that's a body swap.
I watch a lot of Law & Order SVU, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my mind just has gone to a bad place of how that baby came to be.
That one or the one that Spider, like,
no, the Sigourney Weaver one, like, she's like,
you,
in,
are you saying
in,
someone had like hotel sex with her? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
With her dead body, her dead
Na'vi
body,
not dead, she's just not in
Bill.
It
like completely.
It was like an empty shell.
What happened? Like, because it was she, the human, was dying. They tried to, like, get the tree to transfer, to body swap her into her avatar.
But, yeah, but she had, like, Gen 2 USB.
So, the avatar was still alive. Because it was, because it just sleeps, right? So, it's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, it never died, the body.
Yeah.
But somebody impregnated it?
If that is the, like, if that's the actual answer, I'll be so impressed with the film.
It's gone into a dark place.
What, so, wait, so who's the, who do we know as the mother of Spider? Because it doesn't
matter. Well, we don't know. We don't. Yeah. So Quaritch must have been banging some girl before they sent
completely
all the humans
away. If
there was a
matter
of consent that we're, like, iffy about, it would be him. So,
yeah, completely.
Yeah. Moving on. Two mystery pregnancies.
I feel like it's strange that they never mention the mum. I feel like she might come into play in a other movie because it feels like the whole franchise is going towards his redemption arc now. So we're going to be spending a lot more time with him, maybe some flashbacks.
Who, the Colonel guy?
Yeah.
I'm not down.
Because he's the most interesting, like, three-dimensional character of the entire franchise, right?
How?
I'm like, crew cut military guy with the scars. You fucking pulled him out of the... Why did you do that?
Spider?
Because there needs to be sequels, Lucy.
Because
there needs to be
clone
sequels.
Dad.
That I do think this is a problem
dying,
with this one.
Wouldn't you save him?
This movie is falling into the Marvel trap of having to think about the sequels coming before it and not actually...
Yeah, give me strength. Like, I can't do it, man. We're not... I can't.
So Quaritch, I guess, is our main body-swapped character in this film. So he's the one that goes through the journey of he was a human. Before he died, he put his consciousness on a USB, and then when they died, they put that into the avatar, and now he has to live as a Na'vi in
which
a
is not a
Na'vi
body swap,
body.
But that's just a clone with a copy of you in it. Moving on.
No, because your consciousness, if that consciousness
still wakes
all
up
it
in
knew
a new body,
it's still a human. He was a human old consciousness that's been put into a Na'vi body. I agree with you, Paul. It's a body swap.
Disagree. Moving on. I could embarrass you guys by explaining, but I
mean,
think
you're
that's
the expert. I defer to you, Brendan.
What do you think? Maybe that means next time it actually won't be a body swap and we won't have to do it for the podcast.
I think it's extremely possible that the term avatar will no longer be relevant to this because no one will be becoming avatars in this.
Well, the thing is, like, for the purposes of this show, if the character has swapped in a previous film and remains in that
swap
body,
so Sully will keep us watching all four of these.
Unless Jake Sully and Quaritch like stab each other and die in the next one, and then we will have to keep watching these films because they're always going to be in their swapped bodies.
Well, that's why I think Kiri is like an avatar for the planet, for like Gaia, that like to keep the avatar thing going, she's like Jesus, right? It's like God created like his son who's really God in human form or whatever. I don't know, I'm fucking shit with religion.
Jake was the one, now she's the one.
She
will have another one.
She is like an avatar for God, for the planet. She is like the, so she's like the, like the planet's in her is my guess. Anyway,
interesting.
That's my theory, is how they're going to keep doing the whole avatar thing when they stop putting characters into Na'vi.
Don't get me started on this dumb tree, like that, like hides the fountain of youth in the brains of fucking whales in the sea. Like,
well, now it's not now it's not a tree; it's like a sea anemone or whatever.
It's everything.
Yeah,
and it's got some amazing like architectural design and stuff like that. But it also makes them
seizure-inducing.
I guess the other way that these films could continue being body swaps, like, do you think that Spider would become a Na'vi at some point? Surely that's his journey.
Yes, that's possible.
Because it, like, I am
him and that other one are in love, and it's like, it's only going to get worse for them.
Yeah. But also, like, Oh, yeah, on a visual level, it was very impressive. Like, Spider is interacting with a completely virtual world and virtual characters, and it's seamless, and it looks so good.
Yeah.
But why did they give him those dreads? Like, he just looks silly. Like, they could have just given him a buzz cut, and that character would have been 1,000%.
Like, hair like mine. Like,
what's wrong with the dreads? Yeah.
It made it look like it was something out of like a 90s kids film. I don't know. There's just like the something fact about that
like bleach blonde was a bit dumb.
Yeah, he looked like the guy from the Bombfunk MC's Freestyler video clip.
It did look like the Freestyler video. Yeah, I totally see it now.
I think it's Spider's whole vibe. I don't think it's just the dreads. I think he's just a super dorky, goofy character who, I don't know, in the scene, visually, he meshes with the world. The character itself does not belong in this film. Like, it just doesn't.
I think it's an interesting idea, though, about this human.
The film's got great ideas. It's execution on a story level and character level that is always letting these films down. I don't care about any of these people, Paul. None of them.
But I don't think Spider is, like, I don't think the reasons he doesn't work is because of the writing or the acting. I purely think it's a visual. I purely think it's a character design reason why everybody's rejected Spider. I think
White Dread's Tarzan is just not working.
If he didn't have the loincloth and the dreads, people would be a lot more in tune with Spider, I feel.
So can someone tell me, I have never seen footage of the actors with like the dots on their bodies acting this out. Has anyone? Yeah.
But you're aware.
Yeah. I've seen that. Have you ever seen that photo of Emma, Beauty and the Beast? Emma Watson? And like that guy is in such like how she ever just wasn't laughing in his face. It was beyond me. She deserved like an Academy Award. what is Kate Winslet just like in her sweats or?
So it's like a black bodysuit, and then they've got a big helmet that has cameras pointing at their face.
Well, what I'm asking is the actor that is Spider, is he the only one that's really in a loincloth? Because you would be pissed off.
He is. The rest are in every full bodysuits.
Went to work. Yeah. Every day he went to work, he was basically naked.
Yeah. I think it was a kind thing to make that character so young because I feel like he's probably got the metabolism that he doesn't have to really work on that as much as an adult actor probably would have died of starvation, like having to maintain that for like 4 years straight of filming.
Right, yeah.
I do think you're onto something though with the Paul, with the look. If they got him back to the military base, give him a buzz cut, just put him in people's clothes. He wouldn't have felt so weird. Like at that point, start him in the dreads and loincloth, then get rid of them.
That makes no sense. He like literally lives with the Na'vi.
If they forced him to do it.
once he's working on the he's with the military guys.
Oh, with the military guys.
Yeah, then buzz cut him and then put him in people's clothing. And then
why did he work for them in the first place?
Great question.
Because he's stupid. Issues, man. No, it's daddy issues.
Which is that's the other reason the character doesn't work is because he's stupid. It's like, you don't connect. The work is not done to make you care about where that film ends up with him saving. It's like, I do not get why he's doing this.
Because he has not like done the emotional work. Works like every avenue of like the film where he's helping these bad guys who are attempted to kill his brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just constantly helping him, and then all of a sudden they're like putting guns to heads and he's like, oh wait a second, what's up? Mm-hmm. It was just so infuriating. I'm like,
what they need you to do,
the deal was right,
is believe that when Neytiri, full of rage because her son's being killed, comes in and basically puts a knife through his throat and says, I'll kill him, like a son for a son, that he is scared enough of her to think that she would do this for real, and maybe she would have, but like turns on all of the Na'vi people in that moment and goes, I'm going to save this guy because he's actually my dad. And I just don't think it fundamentally works.
But you led him to them. Like, screw Spider, kill him. I don't care.
Oh, yeah, no one cares about Spider. Which characters did you care about in this film? Which characters did you care about?
The whales is
the
my
marine
answer.
Biologist. The
whales. Oh, I know. So sad.
I have to say, I did like when he lost one of the sons. Like, I did get a bit emotional.
What's his name? What's the son's name? Without looking it up, Paul, what's the son's name?
You can see him typing already.
tell me something about this character. Tell me what you know about him.
I will say, as like
a parent. Like,
it was completely unearned, but yes, as someone who
completely.
Has a son.
Same here. I died, yeah.
But I'm like, yeah, we're like fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah, I can't tell you anything about those characters.
No, he's a non-entity.
Yeah.
They killed him because he was the most disposable kid. He had the least personality.
But when his parents, like, give him back to the earth, not, like, the sure. sea.
Beautiful.
That killed me. But I cried only then as well.
But only because you can put yourself in that position. You can reflect on your experience to make that mean something.
Isn't that what good art should do?
No, good art should make you care even if you don't have that experience. It should be able to put you in the shoes of a situation you aren't familiar with and make you care. Derive empathy from that.
Why can't we have both?
Yeah. You can have both. I'm not saying you can have both. I'm glad it worked for you.
Yeah.
But cheated. It cheated.
So I've got something completely unrelated.
Yeah.
I saw this article that Kate Winslet broke the record for holding her breath for the longest ever.
Yeah, I think she broke it 6 minutes.
Because they shot this whole thing underwater, right?
Yeah.
Where they actually did.
Wait, that's even dumber.
But I didn't see where was this long extended sequence where she was underwater.
She was never underwater the entire movie.
I didn't clock it.
It's good to know that James Cameron cut something from this film because it seemed like he put everything he shot on screen.
Yeah, I can't remember her being underwater.
Like, she's she like, wasn't. I nearly died. And I'm like, where?
For Avatar 2, of all things.
She has maybe
know,
those
you would have thought that
one.
It would have been for bloody Titanic, right? I still try and hold my breath every time in that movie when they have to do it, and I can never do it. I'm
pretty
not going to.
Sneaky. Sorry, pretty sneaky of James Cameron to just put Titanic
just
into this movie
Kate
at the
Winslet
end.
Kate Winslet every time. Yeah.
But, you know, like, he did repeat a lot of beats from Titanic in this, but I was here for it. They worked just as well.
There are
only
really,
so many stories we can tell.
There are lots of sequences in this film where I was into it for a period of time. Like, the battle at the end when they all show up and they're going to take on the ships and, like, the whale is taking
the
down the whaling
ship.
Yeah,
the redemption arc for the whale.
Right,
for
sure. That was great. That whole extended fight sequence was great. And then it gets to the point where it's, like, Jake and Quaritch are going to have a fight. I'm like, cool, climactic fight, film's about to end. And then it keeps fucking going. And I was just like, come on, guys. It's time to go home. We don't need to keep doing this. The film is over now. Please
stop.
What
do you think, Paul? Do you think they need to be so long?
Look, I could definitely see a 2.5-hour version of this film that was a lot stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, as someone who spent several hundred dollars to travel somewhere just to see this fucking thing.
Thank for your buck.
I got a lot of value for my dollar.
Okay.
But yes, I can totally see that it probably would have been a stronger 2.5-hour movie.
And I just think maybe you're going to be more in the cultural conversation if you make these movies rewatchable.
And it's also like a financially, films make more money when they're shorter because they can fit more sessions into one day.
Can I ask some questions now?
Yes.
Why did they go hang out with the water people and endanger them rather than just move deeper into the forest by themselves?
Because movie would
be
happen,
a very
right?
boring film. Yeah, there's my short
like,
movie.
The entire planet is literally like a Na'vi resort, and like every single plant is like USB, like you know, plug in, and, you know. A Whipple turtle thing will turn into a microwave oven. So why not just like chill out in the forest?
It just made me think of Harry Potter. It's like everywhere he goes, people will die because Voldemort wants him, and like people hide him and whatever. And it's just like, it's just him. And it was the same with Jake. It was just like, yeah.
The other part of it, I think, if you logically think about this, there was like, what, half a dozen of these like army Na'vi guys, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
if they just managed to get rid of them, it was going to take another 5 years to get more of these guys anyway. It's like they were the only thing that was a problem because they were the ones able to get past this like immune response thing when they were, where they were hiding out. Once you get rid of them, they're back to being safe in there. So just like make an effort to get rid of these guys and then it's over. It's fine. Like there's a bit simple solution then we're going to leave now.
Yeah.
Also, that's the bit I wanted to say. The bit, the absurdity of the film, they, as you said, Brendan, they cross 5 years across the fucking galaxy. They build these, must be very expensive avatar bodies, put this guy's consciousness into him. He gets there. The guy they're after, well, the reason to be there is so that they can take over. And they spend the rest of their time just chasing this guy down rather than doing something else. Like, why would you let a valuable resource do that? Why is he allowed to just go and chase down Jake Sully, who is having no impact anymore on the war?
I don't know. Why can Bezos go into space?
I don't know if that's a response.
But I just feel like it's people, like the right people with the right money to do whatever they want, right?
But that's he doesn't have money. Quaritch doesn't have money. The military who are, you know, in charge of him, or this corporation who, you know, pay his wages, they get to tell him what to do, and they let him go off and fuck around for a year, chasing Jake Sully.
Right, let's play hypothetical. You've been killed. All of a sudden, you wake up. You're in a giant blue cat body, and your employees are like, "You're welcome. Now go kill some natives." Like, do you think your first response is like, "Oh yeah, back to work, yeah, same old, same old," or would you be like, holy shit, like, my complete, like, reality is like, torn asunder.
Yeah, but that guy's evil.
Am I really going to spend this second chance just doing the same thing and ending in the same way? Or am I going to maybe...
Like, I do agree with Lucy in that his character, I do kind of believe it. He had such a singular purpose. He had such a bravado to him. Like, his whole, like... purpose in life was just to show how fucking tough he was to everyone else. Like,
I just kind of feel like if a son can turn your entire existence around, surely the fact that you're now in the body of your enemy, you may be like, oh, what am I fighting for here? My own destruction.
Are you saying that your kid hasn't turned around your entire existence?
But also, I don't think he saw himself as being in the body of his enemy. I think he thinks himself as being in a avatar created by the humans. Like,
if I woke up in the body of a pig, you better believe I'm all of a sudden vegetarian. I'm now, like, you know, advocate. You'll see me on the news, a talking pig, talking about abolishing the slave of farms and stuff like that.
Playing the Hair Machine song. That's a deep cut.
What you're describing, Brendan, is a better movie because dramatically it's interesting.
But we already did that. My Brother the Pig. This is it. What
that's
is? Always,
that's, yeah, cut to that song.
Should we go to the next segment or does anyone have
any No, because I have more questions. Where are all the elders? Do they just kill them off? Or the I don't see a grey-haired old Na'vi.
Well, didn't a lot of them die in that battle?
All the old ones, they just couldn't get away fast enough on their crutches.
They're in the retirement village.
They put them on an iceberg and float them out to sea.
They're in a little leaf hammocks in some warmer climate or something, yeah.
The Florida of Pandora, yeah.
No, I think it's like a deep secret that they just kill their elders. Like, it's like a Logan's Run thing, they eat them.
We literally saw elders in the first movie. Like,
did we?
We did.
Yeah, because
if you say like 45 is elders, I would agree with you. I'm talking about like where are 80-year-olds and stuff like that.
Maybe they just age particularly well.
Yeah, or maybe, I could see that happening. Maybe they get the white stuff from the whale, you know?
Or they are cats in the end of the day. Cats don't live to 80.
I did notice that what's her name? Jake Sully's wife?
Neytiri.
Like, she had aged well after 30 years. Like, she looked the same.
It wasn't 30 years.
It 13, was not.
It was 5 years.
No, it was like still, 13 years.
Yeah. Because
yeah, she still looked amazing.
Yeah, she looked amazing. Hair's great. Body.
Yeah. Which leads us into hot or not.
Yes.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, so you heard what we thought of the movie, but how attractive did we find the cast? Now it's time for Hot or Not. Take it away, Brod.
Are they a toot or a boot? Are they ugly or cute? Tell me if they're hot or not.
Ding! Everyone is beautiful in their own way.
Oh, boy.
Four-way is just terrible.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, we already established what we thought of a lot of these characters in our last review, unless you have something, like, especially interesting to add to it, Brod, in terms of what you thought of Jake or Neytiri.
Fuck all of them. There's no redheads. That's a shame, isn't
that's
it?
That's true. Yeah. Well, yeah.
So let's have a look at some of the newbies.
I'm glad that's a bit you remember about all our discussions, Brent.
I feel like Avatar 3, they're going to go to the fire people. Redheads.
That's Brendan, confirmed. They've already confirmed that. Yes, they're going to the Fire Nation.
Really?
Yes,
really?
They are. Yeah.
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 This is like Nickelodeon's Avatar.
See you in hell. Yeah.
All right. So Stephen Lang as the Avatar version of Quaritch.
Boo.
Hot or not?
Nah, he had a crew cut with a giant mullet, like the longest braided mullet you've ever seen.
Now, that was the revelation in this film, though, was that underneath the hair thing is just this long, like it's a literal head penis that comes out the back. Like, that's what's under. It's not hair. It's actually, like, a fucking head tail penis thing.
And they, like, use their hair to cover it. It's their shame.
Yes.
So, is that hot or?
Maybe for you.
Lucy, did
no, I hate that guy. I hate him.
Yeah, I'm gonna give him a not, even though I think it is an interesting kind of visual, the Avatar body with the crew cut. Like, I kind of don't mind the crew. I like the haircut.
Paul, you just publicly admitted to liking a mullet, something you said you would never do. So no,
like the front.
Got him, Lucy. You got him.
Yeah.
I think if I was an avatar of a Na'vi, I would try some different, like something different with my hair. So I appreciate that. Like, we have to say he wasn't culturally appropriating. He was, you know, he wasn't, you
that
know,
character
taking
looks
their
like
style.
He was born with a crew cut. Like, so.
Yeah, which literally they may have genetically engineered it to always be a crew cut.
How come they could never solve the five finger issue? Like, It seemed like it was completely irrelevant in the first film. And in this one, they're like, oh, you got five fingers. You're a freak.
Yeah.
Like, surely in the cloning process, they could get rid of them. But
well, maybe they feel like humans, when they go into their avatars, won't adapt to having one less finger on each hand.
But they'll adapt to a tail.
they can adapt to a head penis.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he was already a dickhead in the first one. Hey-o! All right. So, did this film confirm for you, Paul, that they are actually biological and they're having, like, it's not like a robot brain inside these avatars, but because he's like a literal clone with his own brain in there?
I never said they were. I just said that they must have something mechanical in them. They're not 100%.
I think he's backtracking.
I still like my idea for Avatar 2 being that the Avatar was failing.
Yeah.
Like that it was a robot and that it was like outdated. I like my idea.
I mean, there could still be a version where like the biological stuff fails and his like limbs start falling off.
Yeah.
James Cameron, you can use that if you want.
It's a freebie. Yeah,
he's rewriting all of those sequels he's already got pre-planned. It's a better idea.
Throw it in the trash. I was listening to the Swapcast podcast.
um, Brendan Cowell as Scoresby, aka Australian most Australian person on earth.
So Australian I have a thing to say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, how come they let Brendan Cowell have sound like Chopper Reed, have his accent? Yeah. But then they made Jermaine Clement, who is New Zealand. Kiwi. Yeah.
Yeah. Gave him an American accent.
It would have completely been fine for him to be Kiwi. I would have quite enjoyed that.
It's a fucking crime that they made Jake on that Sully awful had to
be. Yes.
Like, he couldn't be Australian, yeah.
Yeah, I've why couldn't Jake Sully
I wrote
be
down five things about this movie, and one of them was Jermaine's accent.
3 hours.
I'm not even saying that he did a bad job. I just don't see what the point was.
No, it was of this completely digital film, his accent was the fakest part of it.
But we're, you know, trailing away from what we should be focusing on, which is, would we fuck the Australian guy?
So, not that character, no. He was awful and, like, very bad. I'm a very passionate vegetarian, so no. But I think Brendan Cowell in real life can get it, so I'm on the record.
Is there something that he's done in his filmography that's like enamored
to him? I do not see him as someone who can get it, you know?
But he's just like a kind of like an Aussie, like cuddly.
Is it from The Secret Life of Us? For our American listeners, there was a TV series called The Secret Life of Us.
Was he in that?
Was he in that?
Was he the main character?
What was he
just
in?
Completely sold it.
Brendan, you don't know who anyone is. It was not the main character.
Apologies, those listening in the United States. I did see your own. Thing is, I don't know anyone from Australia.
He was his big, like, the thing that I personally love him from.
I'll tell you what, whatever it is, didn't watch it. Australian film, pass.
You watched it. It was an SBS comedy series called Life Support.
Ah, he was. And it was brilliant.
Yes. Of course.
Yeah.
Look, yes. He dated Rose Byrne for ages, like a decade or something. There's something going on with this guy, you know? He can get it.
Like, look, I say like 10. Yes, Brendan was implying he had a big dick.
I don't doubt it.
That's why they called him the harpooner.
I say like 10 years ago, Brendan Cowell, in this film.
We all get older, Paul. I'll grow old with Brendan Cowell. No worries.
Fine.
He's got that Avatar money, baby.
Brian, what are you giving him?
Not, though I might give him a BJ if he can stop me from aging, which is something apparently he can get from
he's got that stuff.
There's something that, you know.
And that did seem to be the price. He was...
all right, so Jermaine Clement as Dr. Garvin.
Now Jermaine can get it. This guy was conflicted anyway. Like, his character wasn't as evil. He kind of just gone down the wrong path. But Jermaine,
on the scale of Jermaine evil humans in this film,
I believe he was
conflicted. He still did it all, but he was conflicted.
I was
killing whales.
He's a silver fox.
Hyper intelligent whales that they establish are more intelligent than humans. And Avatar.
You eat meat, so shut up. I have the moral high ground here. So Jermaine can get it. Like,
I
can't even
if
pretend.
If they were so fucking smart,
I can't even go, his character, no, like, I think he's a very attractive man. Plus, you got a woman laughing, you got a woman loving. That guy's funny ass. Like, I love him.
Did you see Jermaine Clement was like right in the top 100 DILFs in the
I don't
recently?
Doubt it. I put him in the top 10, maybe. Like,
top 10.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a not. I'm sorry.
Boo.
I'm just not seeing. Like, great guy. He's funny. But yeah, just I just don't see him in that way. I'm sorry.
Like, at all ever?
No.
Well, that's just more for me. So I just
Jermaine
feel bad
Clement's
for you.
Attractive.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, guys. All right, let's do some friend or foes. Jack Champion as Spider.
Fucking foe. No, I think that guy's so annoying.
Yeah, sorry. He's out.
So many people died because of him.
But, like, is that really... Like, he's been put into a tough situation, guys. Like,
Yeah, it's like if you're, like, Donald Trump's kid. Like,
are you really going to compare him to Donald Trump's children?
Basically. Also, we can't move straight onto friend or foe. The first thing in my notes was pregnant warrior, yes, queen. We're not going to do her?
That was Neytiri.
No,
is it?
Kate Winslet.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I thought you meant the bit to start with Neytiri pregnant.
Like, Tell me how many examples you see of, like, strong pregnant women who were working, and she was amazing.
Yeah. She, like, if you're going to find a big blue cat, well, are we even calling the water Na'vi cats? No, they're
mermaid people things.
And mermaids are classically hot, so.
They've got gills, so yeah, if you're going to be attracted to a giant fish cat lady, she's the one to go for.
Yes.
Can I tell you the weirdest pet peeve I have about this film?
Yeah. Is that fish have breasts?
Okay, you're not far off, actually. No, because they aren't, like, okay. First of all, is there anything else on Pandora that has hair? Like Na'vi have hair, right? So they're sort of like mammals, but there's nothing else on this planet that has hair. But they're vertebrates that stand on 2 feet. When the fish Na'vi, the water Na'vi, swim, right, their tails swim laterally from side to side. But all, like, whales and dolphins and stuff and mammals that are vertebrates like us, their tails go up and down like this. Fish go like this. Mammals go like this. And their tails go sideways like a fish. It's fucking wrong. Biologically, it's bad. James Cameron, do your fucking research.
I feel like James Cameron should know better as well. Doesn't he love should. Going under the sea and
exactly.
shit? Like, I don't have a problem with it. Never would have thought of it. But I feel like James Cameron is well. For the kids listening at home,
when Broad said this and this and this,
I meant like
he was doing a vertical wave version, and then he was doing a horizontal wave
dolphins
version.
Dolphins and whales, they swim through the water, like, up and down, right? Fish... they move from side to swim. And that the Na'vi tails that they swim, they go from side to side like a fish.
What does a platypus do? I feel like they're more like a platypus.
I don't know what a platypus does, actually. That's a good question. But it's flat, so I guess it must go up and down, yeah.
I feel like you should write an essay about this.
Enraged me.
And also, like, they're constantly swimming, and they were, like, super buff. Like, those kids should have crushed... The first kid to die should have been the fight between the forest Na'vi and the aquatic Na'vi. Like, there should have been, like, a pummeled body with, like, crushed skull and stuff. That would have been... Ooh. That's my avatar.
I don't want to hot or not them, but I do think that, these merman Na'vi are more appealing visually than... the tree Na'vi.
More fuckable.
No.
Yeah, I like that smooth, wet gill, scaly skin. Yeah.
Have you Zelda? Legend of Zelda, like the Zora in Legend of Zelda? I love the design of the Zora in Legend of Zelda, and they remind me of the Zora. I think it's very cool. It's a very cool visual thing they've got going there.
Hmm. And the double eyes, like when you've got that second eyelid, that's just, ooh, like, put some...
What? You sounded aroused.
They have the second eyelids, like a platypus, like where they, like, close to cover their eyes, but they can still see, like, semi-transparent eyelids. Ooh, yeah.
What?
This is your doing, Paul. This is all you're doing. Asking us to fucking say we fuck catfish people. What are you?
Catfish. Yeah.
This is my legacy. All right. I was going to friend or foe the other kids, but, like, looking at the IMDb, I can't work out which one's which.
I would, like, say I
the
would.
The characters are Roxto, Aeong Nung, Tsiria, Took, Loak, and Natiam. Do you remember which ones are which?
No one knows who any of them are.
Took was the youngest one, I think.
Took was the little girl.
She was adorable. Cute. I'm definitely friendly. That was a cute
kid. And I got emotional again, like, any time she was in trouble.
She was in danger.
Yeah. Tied up and stuff. I was like, not the girl. Not the, the wee girl.
And when she was like super pissed off when she somehow got kidnapped twice in that sequence. She's like, how were we tied up again?
Fuck my life. I'm a kid. Like, come on.
Yeah. Oh, actually, one last hot or not. Edie Falco as General Ardmore.
What a weird... It was so weird that she was in it, right?
Did you hear that she thought the film had come
Came out ages ago and that it was a flop? Love it. Yeah. Love Edie Falco. She's the best.
She's like, I figured it had come out and nobody watched it.
Do you reckon she's seen The Sopranos? Like, that is so funny.
Like, what year did she film it? Like, what, her scenes?
She filmed it, like, 6 years ago, so she totally forgot, like, if it had come out or not. But, actually, think about it. If we hot her, this will be a double hot. She was in Switch.
What, the Which one's Switch?
The one with Ellen Barkin. Where the guy dies in
Who
the hot
tub. Who
was
she in Ellen Barkin's one?
Yeah, I don't remember either.
She wasn't Ellen Barkin, I know that.
I'm sure she was in that. Wasn't she like the lesbian?
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure. Oh, no. I think that was the other one from The Sopranos.
There's two women.
There are many amazing female characters in The Sopranos. Exactly
the same. Carmella.
The therapist.
Oh, Dr. Melfi.
It was the therapist. Yeah, you got that wrong. They don't even look alike.
They're both Sopranos people.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, kills that.
That's embarrassing for you. Yeah.
I did want to say...
I did a Brendan.
Hey.
Yeah.
I did want to say I would friend Kiri. Sigourney Weaver's one. Like, she'd be a fun stoner friend. You could
she
like.
She kind of had, like, a cool mullet as well.
A bit of a mullet. You could definitely, you know, smoke a doob and, like, talk and about the universe and, like.
Control the forces of nature.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
And it would just be trippy to be around a 14-year-old with a 60-year-old woman's voice coming out of her mouth.
Yes. And the other one I wanted to hot or not was the Na'vi avatar, like. Quaritch's mate who had the Oakleys, like the custom made Oakleys.
Avatar made Oakleys. Yeah.
Do you think they reached out to the Oakley factory and like, we've got these gigantic heads we have to fit this on?
Other explanation is there?
Now it's time for Opinion Swap, where we find some entertaining reviews of Avatar The Way of Water from across the interwebs. This one's from Dakota Joaquin, who gave it 3.5 stars, and they say, I actually have a very close friend who worked intimately with the editing team behind Avatar The Way of Water, and let me tell you the absolute nightmare it was to get James Cameron to cut anything from this film. The first day of the official editing process, the editing team showed up to the editing bay at 5:30 a.m. sharp when Cameron told them to arrive. For 7 straight hours, they were left waiting at a locked door for Cameron to arrive. Eventually fed up, the senior editor of the team stormed off and started to look for Cameron. 30 minutes go by, no word. Finally, he came back to the team, who are all standing, still waiting outside the locked door. My friend asked how it went. At first, the senior editor didn't say anything. When my friend asked again, the senior editor's blood-soaked face slowly slid off, revealing James Cameron standing above them. The motherfucker had skinned the senior editor alive, head to toe. Watching in absolute shock and horror, the editor team sat there petrified. James Cameron then threw the bloody skinned face at the foot of the team and leaned in real close, and in an almost sharp-like whisper, he uttered, not a single fucking minute of my film will be cut. Not 1 minute. Thus, here we all are, forced to watch 190 minutes of blue people swimming underwater.
Except for the evidence that I almost killed Kate Winslet.
I want to applaud that. That was a journey, and I enjoyed every minute of that. That was great.
That was an amazing review.
That was fantastic.
I feel like that person should write scripts.
That was a more compelling story than the one I watched for 3 hours and 15 minutes.
You know, like how you have like The Social Network and stuff. I would definitely watch a like a film about behind the scenes of the Avatar films.
Jasper Kirkpatrick Navarre gives it 4.5 stars, and he says, damn, that fish girl was hot.
He means the young one, though. That's the bit that's gross about it, like, like the tween one. The one
was
that,
she a tween or is she a teen?
I don't know. It's gross either matters. Way. It's gross on multiple levels.
Yeah, when men are like, I fell in love with this girl on her 18th birthday. It's like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Leo wasn't in this film. Don't bring him into this.
I
know this reference.
Leonardo DiCaprio likes dating young women.
He's never dated anyone older than 27.
He gets
older and they stay the same age.
He keeps dumping them when they like turn 27 or whatever it is.
Like someone's made a graph of it. It's incredible. It's like he's on the y-axis or whatever. It's like his age is going up and theirs is going down.
All right, Connor Eats Pants gives it 3 stars. And he says, with a frame rate this variable, I think this was running on a Nintendo Switch.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I don't get the reference, but I'm glad for you guys.
Cameron Fetter gives it 4.5 stars, and he says, they did Forest Navi and Water Navi, so the next one is just going to be Normal Guy Navi who lives in houses.
Compelling.
Brad didn't look impressed with that.
It wasn't where I was going, and then I had to sort of like, what are they saying? Okay. I got there.
You have to like go through your mind. It's like, oh, is this racist?
And finally, we have Saw Caesar, who gives it 3.5 stars, and they say, I've never felt as immersed as when I stood in the bathroom stall at my local cinema and released the real Way of Water after 3 hours of holding it in.
That's actually, that did something I was interested in. I remember going to see U570 or something like that. I can't remember the name of the film. It's like a submarine. U571. This is when I was, I'm talking about the prequel, U570. when I saw U571, I remember, because that's a film on a submarine underwater the entire time. And the moment that film left, like, 90% of the audience immediately went to the bathroom because everyone was just desperate to pee. I was surprised that that didn't happen watching this 3-hour movie that was mostly set at water. I was expecting the same effect. Yeah. Didn't happen.
There was a lot of people in my cinema that got up to go to the toilet.
Like during?
During, yeah. I can remember I had that with Inception. And I was like, if I miss any of this, I'm not going to understand. Like, it's so complicated. But I was with my friend. She had to unbutton her pants because she needed to pee so badly. And I had to go and I ran so quickly and came back. I still made sense of everything. But yeah, that was very funny.
So two people that we went with, Bron and I went with, went to the toilet at one point, and we were genuinely both in our minds thinking, are they going to come back?
Yeah, I thought they just left. They were just going.
I was pretty nervous. Like, I'm 8 months pregnant. I was like, am I going to be able to do this? But it was fine.
Okay, I'm glad you made it.
I got popcorn. Right. I was so thirsty. I didn't drink any water. So salty.
Let's get to tenuous recommendations, where we each recommend a piece of media that is linked to today's movie in some way. And a reminder, if you ever want to see a list of all the recommendations we have made on the show, head over to our Letterboxd page, which is linked on our website. Now, I'll get us started. My connection is another 2022 movie that also ran for over 3 hours and was also an action epic. And that was the Indian smash hit, RRR. Has anyone in this chat seen RRR yet?
I have not.
No.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. So this film is amazing. There was a point where I used to watch a lot of Bollywood films and I kind of got fed up because they are all very long. But the great thing about Bollywood, and this isn't Bollywood because this is like another part of India making it, and it is actually in a different language. It's not in Hindi. The version that's on Netflix has been dubbed into Hindi, but it's not originally in that language. But the good thing about Indian films is that they just go balls to the wall. You'll get action. You'll get musical sequences. They just aren't afraid about being so over the top and dramatic as possible. And this film definitely does all those things in the best way possible. And there's a reason why this film has kind of caught fire beyond the normal Bollywood audiences. And it's actually become a bona fide hit all around the world. And once you watch it, you just understand. And the idea of watching a 3-hour Bollywood film, like, I can understand why this seems unappealing, but I say just give this film a go. Even, like, I admit I did not watch it in one sitting. It has an intermission in the middle. Watch it in two parts, like two movies. It totally works that way. But this film is a ride. The action is spectacular. The music is fantastic. The dancing in the musical sequence, like, even if you just Google the musical scenes, I feel like that will sell you on this film. So,
cool.
It's streaming worldwide on Netflix at the moment.
Look, I'm sorry, Netflix but you now. Cannot oh, shit. Give that to me as a tenuous. I don't have. I already had to watch this 3-hour movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that to you. But if you feel like watching it in parts like a TV show, it would totally work that way. So
maybe one episode you can give me the first half and Brendan the second.
That's my recommendation. Broad.
Well, my tenuous recommendation is Avatar. I'm recommending Avatar, by which I mean the first Avatar, by which I mean the real Avatar, by which I mean the best TV show of all time, Avatar The Last Airbender, which arrived 4 years before James Cameron's dumb blue cat people movie, which the he is movie. Now trying to... Pardon?
You're recommending Avatar the movie...
I didn't say the movie. I said I'm recommending Avatar. I never said the movie.
He's being a shit.
Yes, he is. Which James Cameron is now trying to co-op with his elemental shit, The Way of Water. Really? Introducing the bad ash cat people in the next film? Come on. I see what you're doing, Jim. And I'm here to fight the power. I'm taking back Avatar. Na'vi? More like Na'vi. I'm not having it. Bending forever. Ponytail sex? Never.
Well, did you also hear that the Avatar TV series, which I agree is amazing,
I feel like have one of you already recommended that?
I've recommended this at least twice now, I'm pretty sure.
Did you hear that originally the show was just going to be called Avatar, not Avatar The Last Airbender, but because James Cameron got the rights to the name Avatar like 30 years ago, they weren't able to use it.
Here's the thing, though, right? The idea of the Avatar, of it being called Avatar, the whole franchise being called Avatar, makes infinitely more sense for it to be the name of Avatar The Last Airbender, Korra, the new series, the new movies that are going to be coming out in the next few years. Thank fucking God for that. The Avatar part of James Cameron's Avatar is becoming less and less relevant. It should be rebranded as like Pandora or something like that, which is actually more relevant to the story than the Avatar part. It's like it's becoming less and less relevant very, very quickly. So just give it back. Give it back to Nickelodeon, James. You don't need it, mate.
Lucy, what's yours?
So my link is Brendan. He can get it, cow. Ooh.
That's definitely not my nickname.
And I'm doing the Australian 2007 film Noise. Have we seen it?
I have not.
Yeah, no. So Brendan Cow plays a cop that he suffers from really bad tinnitus, and it's getting like worse and worse, and it's like impacting on his life and his job. And one night it's so bad he passes out, and like a big crime kind of happens on his watch. Mm-hmm. And the film deals with the fallout of that, and there's like lots of themes of like racism, and it's sort of like some cops are bad, and it's like a thrillery whodunit, and it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember it being really good, and I think it was quite well received as well. And little Easter egg, the writer and the director is actually the uncle of the guy that I sing the theme tune with.
Oh, wow.
For this podcast. And his auntie did all the musical scores, that did the musical score as well. I don't know if that's like counts as
so
that
you're saying
Nepo we- baby article. but yeah, there's that little link as well.
So what you're saying is we're actually like a degree of separation from the Avatar franchise.
I mean, kind of. That's a bit of a Kevin Bacon thing there. And then I think, yeah, no, that director directed lots of the Please Like Me episodes. That was like his, yeah, he did a lot of that. There you go.
Oh, great one. I'll have to check it out.
Mm. Yeah, it's good.
Brendan, what's yours?
My film, I have to say, I'm pretty sure I stole this entire take from Red Letter Media, but it just came to mind when I was watching this film. So my film is also about a race of aliens that have been like abused and mistreated by humans. And the film is called District 9. Does everyone remember District 9?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, and so like I just remember them talking about how you've got District 9, which has these literal like cockroach looking creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Not these like fuzzy giant baby eyed cutesy poo like blue cats, like really gross, disgusting aliens. And you can't help but be like cheering them on as they're like fighting their way through like bloody violence against humans. Like, you know, I was just watching the end of Avatar: The Way of Water, and I'm just like really uncomfortable just seeing like a race of people just slaughtering humans. But in District 9, I'm like, yeah, get them, those fuckers. And that's because like they do the work. You really care about these people who are like in these like apartheid conditions, and it has like a really cool like visual style. It does like this like documentary aesthetic, and the special effects, even though nowhere near as much money as Avatar, it does it well enough that it feels good and it looks good, and it's a worth a watch. I don't know if it's racist now. I don't know. I can't remember, but we'll find out.
What's also interesting about that, you were mentioning the visual style, the documentary style. The other amazing trick that film pulls off is somewhere in the middle of the movie, and you don't like see it happening, it turns into a normal movie. Like, it turns into a... It stops it being documentary style.
Yeah.
It just stops, and you don't see it happen. You don't recognize... There's not a moment where it goes, and now flick, it just sort of turns into...
Yeah, it doesn't go, like, and letterbox.
It's yeah. It's a magic trick. It's so cool. You just realize all of a sudden, oh, the documentary thing stopped. When did that happen?
Yeah, and I remember when that film came out, like, the trailers didn't tell you a whole lot about what the film actually was. Yeah,
which was cool, hey?
Mm-hmm.
And then you went and watched it, and everything was a surprise.
Absolutely.
Which doesn't happen very often anymore, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, great choice. Just don't watch his follow-up, Elysium. That film is a
garbage.
That's right.
If you head over to our website, you'll see that each of us has ranked every Body Swap film we have reviewed on the podcast. So my question is, where are we all going to put Avatar: The Way of Water on our lists?
I'm going to put it below the Futurama Body Swap episode we did and above the Lizzie McGuire Body Swap episode we did. We should put it somewhere in the middle. Somewhere in the middle.
Okay, nice. I am going to put
Cannot wait to hear. Yeah.
Just above the original Avatar. So that will put it in between Being John Malkovich and Avatar. So it's in my top... It's in my top five.
Did it push Avatar out of the top five, the first one?
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm doing the same thing. I'm putting it above Avatar and under Freaky Friday 1976.
I'm gonna put it in between. It's weird because I don't know if I liked it more than the original. But then the list is so janky that, like, it's all kind of wrong. Like, so I'm going to put it in between Vice Versa and Shazam.
Nice.
So a little bit further down, but still in the upper echelons.
It's funny. I've been ragging on this film a lot. I definitely recommend people see it. I recommend you go and see it once on a giant screen in 3D if you can. And then never think about it again.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, if you do happen to find yourself in a state with an IMAX, I know most people are lucky enough to actually live in cities that have an IMAX, unlike us, poor Adelaide people. Like, that's the way to watch it.
Yeah, if you don't, do something about it. Like, write to your state, local government.
Local representatives, council, yeah.
Your representatives, like, this is, like, important stuff, people.
It is to me, you know. Next episode. We've mentioned her in like the last few episodes. We have this lovely listener, Kylie. She sent us an amazing email and iTunes review. And to reward her, we are going to do the film she suggested that we watch, which actually sounds pretty interesting. So, it's a 2015 French film called The Nobodies, and where after having their bodies stolen, Lily and Ben will explore a world where the body no longer matters and in which their soul will be put to the test. They'll be helped by Magali, a 5-year-old child in the body of a 30-year-old bearded man. Welcome to the world of the disassociated.
That actually sounds rad.
Yeah, it actually sounds really cool from everything I'm reading. It's from this like YouTube group, filmmakers that do these like high budget YouTube movies. So, yeah, I'm really keen. It's a comedy, but with a cool sci-fi premise. So.
I was gonna say it didn't sound like a comedy, but that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So sign me up, and it's free to watch on YouTube. So
love
watch
that.
Along at home.
Much yeah. more accessible than going to Melbourne.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. That's a 2015 film, The Nobodies. So, yeah, looking forward to that one.
Cool. Now, Nobodies.
See? It's two meanings. So, Brod. What is happening on the Hunting Seasons?
The Hunting Seasons podcast is coming to an end. We are about to reach our 200th review episode. We're going to be reviewing Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1. We've been saving that up for ages. This is
amazing.
My co-host, Damask, and I. This is basically the show that made us friends. We connected in high school, both being fans of Buffy, defended Buffy from dickhead friends who thought it was shit. I remember getting very drunk at a party and just double teaming on this guy, telling him what a fucking idiot he was.
Not for Buffy. Girls, so.
He deserved it. Pardon?
Nothing.
What was that?
I said it's for girls. I was trying to be that guy at the party.
I will call Damask and get her on the line and we will fucking ream you about this.
Just trying to play a character.
Boo!
Boo this man. So we're going to be reviewing Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1, which, spoiler alert, I was actually a little bit hesitant about going back to it. It's been a long time since I've really watched it. And I was like, oh, Season 1, it's sort of, you know, it's from 1996. Is this really going to hold up? It's still a great show.
Yeah,
even in season
is.
One.
Yeah, I watched it again recently.
I fell in love with it very, very quickly all over again. And I've just kept watching it, honestly, which you can do now because I don't have to do TV homework anymore because it's the last show I had to do. So we're going to review that and post the episode soon. And then not long after that, we'll post one final episode, sort of a recap episode, looking back at the last 6 years of making Hunting Seasons. And then that'll be it. We'll be going on to do something else. I'll be having a baby mid-year, so that's going to take up a lot of my time. We might discuss some other potential things we might be doing as well.
Yeah. Cool. And it's very sad that you guys are finishing up. For me as a listener,
I'm sorry,
happy
Paul.
For you guys, because it is such a fucked thing to have to watch a season of TV every week. And I've greatly appreciated all the times I got to be on the show. And I was just on your last episode, which
Correct.
Was a White Lotus Season 2 review.
It was.
Which I recommend everyone watch that show and our review.
Yeah,
it's
Brendan.
Amazing TV.
What?
Brendan, you piece of shit. Piece of shit.
He wasn't even listening, I don't think.
I wasn't.
I do want to say, Paul, thank you for coming to the show as often as you did and for being a friend of the show and a friend of mine at Damask's as well and for the nice things you've said about it and just for being listening to the show, honestly. Thank you very much. And there's 200. We've done 200 reviews. So if you've never listened to the Hunting Seasons podcast, go and check us out, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Do a search. There's a little search bar there for a show that you like or are interested in us talking about. There's a strongish chance we've probably talked about at least one show that you like or hate.
Now which episode was I in? Oh, that's right. None of them. I was never invited on the show.
Awkward.
And do you want me to see
honestly, Brendan,
I was invited, but I couldn't do it because I was too busy.
We actually did plan to have you on, but it was for the show we're going to do for 201, and we decided to cut short there. Sorry, mate. So you just missed out. Sorry.
That's okay.
Maybe if you weren't a piece of shit and actually liked The White Lotus, you could have been on it.
Fucking dissing Busby, even if it is ironically or sarcastically, nah, mate.
You know, I was gonna
need not apply.
Sing the Vitamin C song "Graduation" for you for your last episode, but I'm not doing that now.
All right, so thanks again for showing up on our show.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. Now that your show's ended, you'll have even more free time to be on our show.
Honestly, yeah. If you're ever looking for a guest or someone to fill in, please hit me up. I'd be happy to be on. I've got the podcast equipment. It's just going to be sitting around doing nothing. So, you know.
Yeah. And I think since now you're having a baby and Lucy's about to have a second baby and Brendan's had a baby, we can do
When are you having a baby, Paul?
Never. But we can
do
like a
mama boy situation.
Well, I was thinking we could do like a Muppets Babies situation. Have like
our
junior
babies do a podcast.
Yeah, junior swapcast.
That's a great idea.
And I can be like the mum that comes in and tells them off. Anyway,
swapcast babies. I'm into it.
Yeah. All right. So until next time, don't be a piece of shit on the ground. DPW.
Yeah, Brendan.
Yeah, like Brendan. And review us on iTunes or Spotify. And I was Paul Mitzi.
I was Lucy Thomas.
I was Brendan Levi.
And I was Broderick Gordis.
Thank you. See you. Bye.
Bye.
As we go on, we remember. We got to put little bits and pieces of the hunting podcasts on here. Advertise we.
The Swapcast podcast is recorded in Adelaide, Australia. It's hosted by Paul Mitzi and edited by Brendan Levi and Paul Mitzi. Our theme song was written and performed by John Marco of Too Creative, featuring Lucy Thomas, and recorded at Browntown Studios. Our music bumpers were created by Reggie Parker. Contact him on parkerregmusic@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.